from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up in this morning's opening forum hour, yesterday historic arguments on gay marriage were presented to the U.S. Supreme Court on the constitutionality of state bans on same-sex marriage in states where it is not legal. We'll get reaction and analysis to the arguments as well as thoughts about what might result. The decision is expected in June. Then in the second half of the hour, President Barack Obama yesterday condemned violent protests in Baltimore after the funeral of 25-year-old Freddie Gray, who died from spinal injuries he sustained while in police custody. President Obama called for Americans to instead engage in soul-searching over police brutality. We'll talk about it. It's next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum program. Four states, Michigan, Ohio, Tennessee, and Kentucky, have bans on same-sex marriage that have been upheld in federal appeals court. And yesterday, the United States Supreme Court heard arguments on whether those bans violate the United States Constitution. The states say that a court ruling against them would thwart the will of their citizens. But defenders of same-sex marriage argue that equal protection laws afford them the same marriage rights as straight couples. A ruling is expected in June. In this half-hour opening segment, we want to discuss the high court and arguments that were heard on the constitutionality of same-sex marriage. And joining us in studio is Professor David Levine. He's professor at UC Hastings College of Law. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Michael.
Good to have you. Well, what did we learn yesterday? We'll hear some of these cuts, but from your perspective.
Well, we learned that it's still a very, very close question. You could tell from the very active questioning that at least two, maybe three of the justices are really mulling it over. I think we'll end up focusing on Justice Kennedy, but he in particular seemed to be debating with himself. At the beginning of the hour, he seemed to be going toward the state's rights position. Toward the end of the hour, he seemed to be going to the individual rights position. So we'll see where he ends up.
And let's sort through that. But before we do, Chief Justice Stephen Breyer, who certainly is seen as being on the side of in favor of same-sex marriage, seemed to have his own reservations about whether the court should decide and what they should decide on this issue. Let's hear a cut.
And suddenly you want nine people outside the ballot box to require states that don't want to do it to change what you've heard is change what marriage is to include gay people. Why cannot those states at least wait and see?
Surprise you?
Well, I'm sure that the lawyer who was arguing for the same-sex couples probably had a big lump in her throat when that came out. Sometimes Justice Breyer likes to muse, and later on in the argument, he seemed to come around to the other position again, that it was a fundamental right. But that's the big issue. It's absolutely the big issue, which is this something that ought to be done at the ballot box and by the legislature, or is this something where the constitutional democracy cuts in and the Supreme Court and other courts come in and say, no, this minority has to be protected.
And there was an article, for example, in The Economist that said the case against is not necessarily one of bigotry or homophobia. It's the idea that maybe you should let people vote, that it should be part of the political process. That's essentially what this decision is based on, isn't it?
Right. The core of the decision, I think, is exactly that. Certainly at the Sixth Circuit, the 2-1 panel majority said exactly that, that this is something that ought to be decided in the democratic process. Let this happen over time. Justice Ginsburg, of course, famously in musing about Roe versus Wade, thought maybe that was the better way to go in that area. So it's a huge debate. There's no right answer as to when a court steps in and when a court allows the other branches to just go ahead and decide a big social issue.
Are we going to hear the same kinds of arguments, though, that we've heard before? And it will presumably get into equal protection and the 14th Amendment, but also things that have come up in the past, like marriages for a man and a woman only, et cetera?
Well, yes, I mean, in the sense that certainly we're going to hear that from whether it's Justice Scalia or Justice Alito who writes the opinion. There were arguments, questions from the bench. Chief Justice Roberts said, every dictionary I've consulted shows that until the last few years, marriage is for a man and a woman only. Justice Kennedy spoke about that definition as being there for millennia. So we certainly are going to hear that.
Well, I've got a listener online already who's saying, hasn't this been before SCOTUS before? Can someone explain how this review is different from past reviews?
Sure. No problem. In the past review, certainly 2 years ago, in the pair of cases that came up, the Windsor case is the case where all that was technically decided was that the federal government has to recognize a decision of a state. So, for example, that Massachusetts had already decided that they would allow same-sex marriage. And what Justice Kennedy said in that case was that the federal government had to go along. They couldn't fail to recognize that. And, of course, in the Perry case out of California, the decision was that the proponents of Proposition 8 had no right to bring an appeal. So the Supreme Court never reached the merits in that case.
Well, you mentioned Justice Kennedy. I mean, everybody thinks he's the swing vote here. He's likely to go one way or the other. How do you think he's likely to go?
Well, it certainly seems as if we're reading the tea leaves that at the end of the day, he will come out in favor of same-sex marriage. I read that from two things. One is that the way he came around toward the end of the first argument, which was to focus on the issues that moved him in the Windsor case, the dignity issue, the need to protect children, that sort of thing. And in the second part of the argument, which had to do with whether or not the states had to recognize the marriages from other states, Justice Kennedy took no part in that. So he had been very active in the first part, and it seemed as if he sat back. So that if he was satisfied with respect to the first question, there was really no need to engage in the second question. So I'm mind reading here, but my guess is that at the end of the day, he'll be writing the 5-4 opinions in favor of same-sex marriage.
Well, I know there are many of you who have questions about the Supreme Court deliberations and the arguments they're hearing and have even heard some of the cuts. We'll hear another cut or two before we end the segment with David Levine. But in the meantime, I'd like to hear from you if you have questions about what this means and if you have responses or reactions to what you've heard and what lies ahead. Join us. Our toll-free number is available now. It's 866-733-6786. We do welcome your calls, and feel free to join us with that number. Toll-free, 866-733-6786. You can also, of course, email us, forum@kqed.org. And since this is only a half-hour segment, if you have something you'd like to ask or bring into the conversation, now would be the time to join us, either by phone or by email or by going onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And let's hear, actually, Chief Roberts, in an exchange with lawyer Mary Bonato, Chief Justice John Roberts wondered whether the plaintiffs weren't trying to change the core of the institution of marriage.
My question is, you're not seeking to join the institution. You're seeking to change what the institution is. A fundamental core of the institution is the opposite sex relationship, and you want to introduce into it a same sex relationship.
And there's a question that leads us toward, I suppose, a conservative Chief Justice position.
Sure. I mean, absolutely. It again turns on this question of who ought to be making this decision. If you think we've had a definition for a long period of time that actually has been set by the states, then there is a strong argument to be made in favor of saying that the states ought to use its own democratic processes to change it if necessary. It depends on how you frame it. Justice Ginsburg came back and said, well, wait a minute. Marriage has changed over time. The legal relationship between the man and the woman has changed dramatically over this long period of time that Justice Kennedy turned to. Miscegenation, of course, had changed in time. So it's not quite right to say that marriage has been immutable.
This could make marriage legal across the nation if it goes, if, for example, Justice Kennedy, it goes 5-4 with Justice Kennedy. But if the court rules against the right, the ability reverts to the states, and then you get into some confusing questions. I mean, if the ban is, for example, reinstated in California, you need a voter referendum to get rid of it?
Well, there's two ways this could go. Assuming we don't get the 5-4 opinion saying same-sex marriage is the only way all states have to go, is that if we ended up with the second part of the argument coming out in favor of saying that all states have to recognize marriages from other states, then what could happen is that people could just jump around from state to state. And so that people in Arizona who wanted to get married could go to Massachusetts, get married and come back, and then that marriage would be recognized. Now, if we turn to California, you're quite right, because where things were left at the end of the Perry case in 2013 was that we had standing Chief Judge Walker's opinion saying that marriage was required under the Constitution. Well, if the Supreme Court says, no, that's not true, then that opinion would effectively go away and Prop 8 would pop back. and we would have a ban on same-sex marriage until and unless the people of California change that by proposition.
We're talking with David Levine about the arguments before the Supreme Court yesterday, hearing arguments on same-sex marriage ban, and David Levine is professor at UC Hastings College of the Law. There are those in the Washington Post, for example, who are saying, especially in states like Florida, you should be thinking of contingency plans and the possibility that that this will be a decision of the court not to go in favor of same-sex marriage, and talking about power of attorney and paperwork in place of and adoptions and all that sort of thing, but also the fact that this could take years of litigation to determine if it goes against. So I know there are many of you with questions, and let me go to them without tearing here. We go first to David in Berkeley. David, hi.
Hi. I'm a rabbi in Berkeley. I've married same-sex couples, including two of the plaintiffs in the Massachusetts case. And one of the things that we said at that wedding was something that Justice Ginsburg reiterated yesterday. Actually, it's the first time I've really heard it in a court matter. She said that we need to also look at the reality that heterosexual marriage has evolved with time, and not to think of this as institution that's been the same for 1,000 years. 1,000 years ago, marriage was really defined between a dominant man and a subservient wife. And that's not an institution that people who are same sex would want to be part of. So in a sense, what's happened is that marriage has become an institution that has finally become worthy of gays and lesbians. And I think that was great that she raised that point yesterday. I was also a bit miffed at how long Justice Scalia stayed on top of this issue, that it was going to somehow limit us clergy people's ability to decide who we get to marry or not.
Yeah, David, I thank you for your comments. Let me get a response from Professor Levine.
Well, I mean, I agree that Justice Ginsburg made a very, very good point. With respect to Justice Scalia, well, I guess it's just Nino being Nino. I don't see how he could help himself. There was a protester.
That almost sounds affectionate. Nino being Nino.
There was a protester during the argument, and Justice Scalia quipped, "Well, that was refreshing." So you just can't help it. You know where he's going to be. He can't help himself. That's a story for another day.
But he and Ruth Bader Ginsburg are actually close friends and spent a lot of time together. I mean, it's interesting, the collegiality between them, though the division is there. There were 2.5 hours of arguments. This is pretty unusual, isn't it?
It's fairly unusual. The Affordable Health Care Act argument was even longer a few years ago. And what it shows is that the Supreme Court, and Chief Justice Roberts in particular, understands the importance of the argument, the complexity of the argument. I do think that it also reflects Chief Justice Roberts as the administrator of the court. His background was that he argued many, many cases very effectively in the U.S. Supreme Court before he became a judge, and I think he's very sensitive to the needs of the advocates.
He moves a lot more slowly than Rehnquist, for example, doesn't he?
He's more indulgent. He moves things along, but he is more indulgent. Justice Rehnquist ran the place to the moment, and he would cut people off in the middle of a syllable.
Let me bring another caller on, and that's you, Mark. Join us. Welcome.
Thank you. Your guest is correct. The argument in the majority opinion from the Sixth Circuit really was maybe it would be better for the electorate. I read every word of that opinion as well as the scathing dissent, and I'm aware of the Supreme Court argument comments from the justices on that point. I'm offended because even without legal training, we all studied Marbury versus Madison, and whether or not there may be another way to solve the problem, as the dissent said in the Sixth Circuit, hey, look, we're judges. We don the black robe. Under judicial review, it's our job to determine whether or not the damn law is constitutional. And I see this as an end run around finally making a decision as to whether or not, like, race and gender, sexual orientation will have the most heightened scrutiny under an equal protection analysis. I'm offended.
Well, it's a very difficult decision. Every opinion that you can think of on these has been very close. The California Supreme Court decision that is most closely germane was 4-3. As you said, caller, the Sixth Circuit was 2-1. We expect this one is going to be 5-4. Just the reality is that it's a close decision. Now, Justice Kagan took exactly your position yesterday. She pointed out it's a constitutional democracy, and it is absolutely, as you said with Marbury, that it is for the courts to make these decisions from time to time.
Let me thank you for the call, Mark, and go to some of our emails. This is Robert who said, could the professor explain what the significance was in the arguments about requiring states to grant, quote, full faith and credit to the distinction between state laws and state acts?
Well, in the Constitution, there is the Article 4 says that states have to give full faith and credit to the acts of one another. And what that means is that a state is not to second guess, for example, a law of another place. Now, with marriages, as a practical matter, states have recognized the marriages of one another, but technically it doesn't quite fit the text of the full faith and credit clause. Chief Justice Roberts asked a question of one of the advocates of, well, with respect to Tennessee, when was the last time outside of same-sex marriages that Tennessee refused to grant full faith and credit to a marriage? And the lawyer said, well, back in 1970, there was one. It was a stepfather and a stepdaughter who had gotten married somewhere else, and Tennessee refused to go along with that. So it's very rare that marriages are not accepted, except for this area of same-sex marriage where it has become a very big deal.
Well, let me get a response from you, David Levine, from another email. Paul writes, whenever a marriage takes place, it is first and foremost a civil action process, much like a driver's license. So denying that to same-sex partners is simply a denial of a civil right.
I think fundamentally that's where the majority is going to go. The complication we have is that we have mixed together the civil state function and the religious function. In Europe, they keep them separate. And one way we might have gone would have been to say that we would separate those as well, that everybody would have the right to get a civil marriage, a governmental marriage, and then if they wanted to add on a religious marriage, that would be fine. It's the intertwining of the two that I think makes this so complicated.
And we go to another of your calls. Don, join us. Hi.
Hi. My question has to do with the comparison between this and the Loving v. Virginia case. How and why, if the ban on same-sex marriage is upheld, couldn't interracial bans be reinstituted in states and populations that don't agree that the races should mix?
I think the difference is that, without a doubt, race is highly protected under the 14th Amendment. We don't have a federal decision that, certainly from the U.S. Supreme Court, that definitively says that sexual orientation is entitled to either the protection of gender or of race. That's why there would be a difference.
And let me thank you for the call. Don, let me go to some more emails here. Steve writes, as a conservative myself, I'm always appalled when other conservatives talk about the will of the people. Being a conservative all starts with our Constitution, which exists to protect us from the will of the people. Jim Crow was the will of the people. Discrimination is discrimination, no matter how many believe it should be the law of the land.
Well, the counterargument, if I can be Justice Scalia here for a moment, is that unless it is explicitly something that is carved out of the democratic process in the Constitution, then it is something to be decided in the democratic process. This one is close. I mean, from all these votes that I described before, it's obviously a close one. Do we say this one is on the side where the judges ought to step in our constitutional democracy, or is it one where the judges ought to step back and allow our constitutional democracy to go forward?
So instead of Nino being Nino, Levine is Nino there.
For the moment. Just for sake of argument. Devil's advocate here.
Here's another email from a listener named Dennis who says, the opponents of same-sex marriage keep saying that it is an imposition on their religion, basically. But if it's a religious matter, then marriage should be unconstitutional because the state is not allowed to establish religion. If the state is going to grant rights such as tax brackets and inheritance based on one's status as a couple, then the state must not discriminate based on a religious definition of who is allowed to be a couple.
Well, there's a lot to that. Again, I do think that it might have been cleaner if we had gone down the road like Europe, which is to separate out the civil function and the religious function. But that's not where we are. But the caller makes a very good point about the intertwining, which does make this more difficult.
Another caller point from Steve who writes, if SCOTUS decides states are free to decide whether to recognize marriages legal in other states, I suggest California should refuse recognition to all marriages performed in states that do not recognize California's same-sex marriages.
That's a really clever idea.
Yeah, it is clever.
That might work, actually. I'd have to think about it more carefully, but that's an excellent question.
Another listener writes, what's the likelihood of recognizing marriages performed in states permitting same-sex marriage but denying the right to perform marriages in individual states?
Well, the likelihood is that that could actually happen. And the way that would happen is that if a Justice Kennedy and perhaps even a Justice Breyer, if you remember from the excerpt we heard earlier, if either or both of them decide, you know, the issue of whether or not a state has to offer same-sex marriage is something that ought to evolve in the states, but that the recognition point has to go forward, that state A has to recognize a marriage in state B, we would be close to the same position because people could run from one state to the other and then bring that marriage certificate back, but it wouldn't be exactly the same.
And David Levine with us in studio, professor at UC Hastings College of the Law, and Kevin is with us from San Jose. Kevin, you're on. Welcome.
Hi. My question was about the distinction between civil marriage and religious marriage. And as this program has actually come pretty close to really discussing that, but so far I have yet to hear anybody point out that religious marriage and civil marriage are separate in a pretty significant way. And while religious marriages are recognized by civil law, the reverse is not required.
Well, that's quite right. That's quite right. I think what that goes to is the broader point of, well, what happens if the Supreme Court does decide that same-sex marriage is going to be required in every state? And then we're going to get to these issues of religious freedom. So, for example, would a church be required to recognize a civil marriage from another place? Would a religious figure like the rabbi who called in earlier be forced to perform a same-sex marriage? And I think everybody agrees that that the answers to those are no, that the religious side would still be kept separate from the civil side.
And again, I thank you, Kevin, for the call. Let me just read a couple emails here. People weighing in. Colt writes, when the will of the citizens is bigotry, as in the case involving bans on gay marriage, it deserves to be thwarted. And here's David who writes, I'm hopeful that this will settle the issue once and for all. There's simply no argument against same-sex marriage. It doesn't come down to how some people feel about other people based on their identity. Tradition and religion are not reasons to limit people's rights or deny them equal protection. And, of course, traditional and religious notions of marriage and divorce have evolved over time as well. Well, talk about time. We expect a decision in June, probably late June.
Right. You? That's right. It'll be somewhere between the 23rd and the 30th of June.
And again, you're not reading any tea leaves here, but the suspicion on your part is it will go in favor of same-sex marriage.
I think so. I think so. Now, of course, you're going to keep the tape and you're going to tell me, hey, 2 months ago, this is what you said, but I think that's where we're going.
Well, good to have you here. Great to have your analysis. I thank you.
David, thank you, Michael.
David
Thanks
Levine,
for having
again,
me.
Is professor at UC Hastings College of Law. This was a half-hour segment, as I said. In the half-hour coming up, we're going to talk about events in Baltimore and we'll get into that whole situation in terms of what's going on. It was quieter last night, but we're going to have some experts with us discussing it and analyzing it and getting reaction to it. And, of course, we want to hear from you as well. So stay tuned for that. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio, and I'm Michael Krasny.